losing money. This shit has hit the fan.
Hello, my name is Mary Mack, and I'm the Executive Director of ACES, the Association of Certified eDiscovery Specialists. And I want to welcome you to TAR Talk with John Trudenik and Tom Grix. This program is entitled TAR, Proportionality and Bad Algorithm. Can you do a reasonable job in a TAR project with a bad algorithm? Tom and John invited noted information retrieval scientist Dr. Bill Dim, founder and CEO of Hot Neuron, the maker of Clustify software, for the latest of TAR Talk. John?
Hey, Mary. It's a beautiful day out on our virtual porch. How are you doing? And I'm in my virtual rocker. I see Tom Grix is in his. You're in yours. I'm having a Prosecco today because it's so nice outside. What are you drinking?
Well, out here in Oregon, we've got high winds, and so I am having a wonderful Irish coffee.
Tom?
Hey man, it snowed a little bit here in Pittsburgh, so I'm actually warming up my insides with a nice smoky Lafroy.
And I'm excited to say we've got Bill Dim, Dr. Dim, joining us on the porch today. I'm going to introduce him, but Bill, what do you have while we sit out today and talk?
Well, I'm strange. I'm a super taster, so I don't drink alcohol or coffee, so I'm going to have tea.
This is going to be a fun topic today, and we're honored to have Bill Dim join us. He's a person that's been involved in this field of analytics, TAR, clustering, for as long as I can remember, and certainly was one of the first people I looked to. Welcome to our virtual porch, and just tell me this. How did a guy who studied theoretical elementary particle physics from Cornell University end up in the e-discovery industry? Did you take a wrong turn somewhere, or did somebody just do a bad thing to you?
Well, I took several strange turns, I'll put it that way. I finished my PhD in 95. Then, like a lot of theoretical physicists, I went to work for a bank doing derivative securities research. Did that for 4 years, and in the middle of 99, I felt like I was missing out on all the fun of the internet bubble. So I quit my job to start an internet startup, launched a website called magportal.com 2 weeks before the internet bubble burst, when NASDAQ started crashing. Magportal is a search engine and directory for finding online magazine articles. As part of building that, I came up with this algorithm for finding similar articles when you find an article you like. In 2006, a law firm called me up out of the blue and said, we've spent the last 2 years looking for software that can cluster tens of millions of documents for this thing called eDiscovery, and nobody can do it. And we saw this thing on your website, so we thought we'd give you a call. So I learned about eDiscovery and launched our Clustify product in 2008, the beginning of the worst recession since the Great Depression. So that's how I found myself in eDiscovery.
So you're a master in timing.
I got to say, you know, I really like the clustering idea. We can cluster them into one big cluster, right? that's kind of a good lead into really what we're talking about today. You know, Bill, you recently wrote an article that I actually thought was fantastic from the minute I saw it, because it answers a question. Well, let's see. It poses a question that I think is a question that really is critical to today's e-discovery and especially TAR efforts. And that is this. You read an article where you suggested you really can't claim proportionality as a defense if you're making a poor production and can't get to the end of the road because you're using a bad algorithm. Talk about how you kind of came up with that, what the background is, and what it is you're trying to get across there.
Sure. So the first thing I would note is that every TAR product is different. Even if they say they are using the same algorithm as somebody else, there's going to be lots of differences in the details of how they implement it and how they tweak things and parameter values and all kinds of stuff. And each system is going to use several layers of algorithms. You know, the thing you hear about a lot is what's called a classifier. Classifiers have names like support vector machine or nearest neighbors or logistic regression, things like that. But even before a classifier starts doing analysis, there's an earlier layer where you're taking the document text and turning it into some mathematical representation that the classifier is going to analyze. And then all of that is wrapped up into a workflow. Things like TAR 1.0, 2.0, 3.0, or names like continuous active learning, stuff like that, that's going to determine how you're training this thing and how you're making decisions about which documents to review and so forth. So there's a whole lot of stages to this process. And every system is going to be somewhat different in different stages of the process, and you're going to get better or worse results depending on how well that particular approach works for the particular problem that you're doing. The question is, if you choose to use an approach or an algorithm that is particularly unsuited for the task that you're doing, how much criticism should you be open to? There's always going to be some performance difference, but when the difference is, if you're doing 10 times as much document review as you would need to do with a better approach, should you be able to get away with going to the court and saying, well, we should be allowed to get 40% recall because getting to 70 or 80 or whatever percentage would require just this astronomical amount of work? And I think, there's a continuum there, but at some point you have to say that you're just becoming irresponsible to use the wrong tool for the project if it's going to create that much work and give you an excuse to not give an adequate production.
That makes sense to me. It always has. We at Catalyst obviously have our own algorithm, our own TAR tool. And by the way, a shout out to Dr. Pickens, who would echo completely your essentially three layers of technology-assisted review. What occurs to me in this is kind of a question here, and that is, there are a lot of folks that are saying that TAR algorithms are all going to kind of get you to the same place, I saw that your article said at least one nearest neighbor, that's probably not the case. Reaction to whether the TAR algorithms are going to get you to the same place, and then tied to that, the second question is, when do we raise this issue? Should we be really waiting until we see that, somebody's not getting to maybe 70% recall? At what point should we start looking at this and saying, man, we got to take a look at whether you've got the right tool?
So the first thing I would say is, if the producing party says, we're going to hit 75% recall and we guarantee that, otherwise, just leave us alone, we'll figure it out, then they've taken the responsibility of picking an algorithm that's not going to waste a lot of their time. So in that case, you really don't have much to worry about if you're the requesting party. The part where there's more concern is if the producing party is saying, 40% should be good enough because it would take too much effort to get further. And then, the requesting party really needs to know what questions to ask to try to probe to see whether or not they're using a bad approach. I picked one nearest neighbor to highlight in the article just because it's such a glaring problem because you can get to a certain level of recall and then the performance just totally dies. And there are people using systems with one nearest neighbor in the real world. It's legitimate, I think, to ask if you see that they're hitting low recall, why. Another issue can be if you have really low prevalence, that can give certain workflows a lot of difficulty. If you're doing anything with training with random documents and prevalence is low, you have to do lots and lots of review of training documents to get enough examples of relevant documents to get decent predictions out. So that's another area that people should be aware that they need to look at.
So what I'm hearing you say is that, no, not all algorithms are the same. And on top of that, that there's process to be considered, different layers of TAR. How the heck do you know what's going on, or how do you protect yourself if you're on the receiving end of either the TAR process or the complaint that, geez, all we can get to is 40% recall, and that should be proportionally enough? What do we do about that?
Well, I think if they say they can only get to 40%, the first question should be why. And if they don't have a good answer for that, then you should be asking about things like prevalence. They should have some idea of why that's happening. If their excuse is, well, this particular tool can only get that far because of the way it works, then the question should be, why are you using that tool?
Yes. Well, let me just jump in for a second. I had this discussion with a lawyer that I've worked with in the past at one point. And the lawyer said, hey, I'm looking at using this tool. I happen to know, actually, that tool used a one nearest neighbor algorithm. And I said, look, I don't care what tool you use. If you give me, 70 or 80% recall, I'll be fine with that. But I can tell you this, I am going to reserve the right to come back to you if you can't get there. Is that a fair approach to say, okay, let's see how well you do. And if you don't get there, I'm going to come back and talk to you, because there aren't a whole lot of people who are willing to commit, for example, to specific recall and precision numbers.
Yeah, that's certainly reasonable. If they do see that they have this opening, though, to come back later and say, well, we couldn't get there, what do we do now? The question is, how much sympathy should they have if they invested a huge amount of effort into a just approach that should have been seen as wrong from the beginning? I mean, this one nearest neighbor stuff. So if you look at my article, you'll see this in more detail. You get this performance cliff at some level of recall. Sometimes that performance cliff will be at 70 or 80% recall, so it'll be good enough. But you don't really know that in advance. And sometimes that performance cliff will be at 40% recall, and you just sort of hit a wall where you can't find any more of the responsive documents. So if they invest a whole lot of time and they only get to 40% recall, then the question is, what's their next step going to be? Now, you know, most systems are not going to have such a dramatic performance cliff, so they're going to have more of a spectrum of recalls they can get to, and it's a question of how much effort they're going to require to get to 70% or 80% or whatever.
So it suggests to me that maybe as a purchaser of these types of tools, someone who wants to get a tool to use, maybe one of the things I really want to do is actually talk to my vendor a little bit about, hey, how's your tool working? I mean, what are you seeing in terms of recall across some of your projects? Does that make sense from a lawyer who's trying to look for a TAR tool?
Well, the better metric would be, how much effort does it take to get to a certain level of recall? And in theory, you know, the tool will normally give you a relevance score that allows you to sort the documents. And if you start reviewing them going from top down, the question is, how much do you have to review before you get to a certain level of recall? So you can get to 100% recall if you want. You just have to review everything. But that's
right,
defeats
right.
The whole purpose
Good
of
point.
Saving any money on TAR. So the real metric is, what does it cost to get to a certain level of recall? And, you know, returning back to this example of one nearest neighbor, you might find that, to get to 50% recall, I find that 70% of the documents I review are relevant, so 30% of the effort is wasted reviewing non-relevant stuff. But then if I want to get to 75% recall, only one out of 20 documents you review are actually relevant. You have to dig through so many non-relevant documents that to get to 75% that it's just insanely expensive. So that's what you want to avoid.
Bill, one of the questions we've gotten from our audience is whether maybe in advance you should guarantee a certain level of recall. I know as a lawyer, and you told me, hey, I'm going to respond to production. I'm going to find 40% of the relevant documents. I'm going to have a problem with that. Should we be bargaining up front for a level of recall?
I mean, that would certainly shift the burden of choosing decent software to the producing party and not give them the opportunity to use excuses to not achieve a decent level of recall. So I think that's a sensible approach. On the other hand, and I'm not an attorney, but you know, there are people who say, hey, it's not the other side's business whether I'm using TAR or not. You know, my job's to do a production, and they've no right to know anything. So you may not even know the other side is using TAR. And so that sort of cuts out this opportunity to negotiate something like a level of recall.
And that's a bigger question than we've got for today, but it gets into validation and ultimately whether you have the right to know what percentage of relevant documents they found. That would apply with a linear search or keyword search as well. And it's one that we've largely ignored over the years in my experience, but now it's coming to the forefront, perhaps because of all the talk about TAR validation.
I agree.
I guess, Bill, what we end up with here is the question is, so where do we go with this? Do we actually get folks in early and say, okay, let's go look, let's talk about the algorithm? I don't know that we can do that, because all data sets are different. Everyone's going to react a little bit differently to every data set, right? I mean, isn't this something that to some extent has to be pushed down the line?
Yeah, there are certain things you can look for up front that are kind of basic. Things like, is prevalence low? If it is, make sure you don't use a tool where that's not going to work. And, you know, your vendor should provide information about how the tool is going to perform at various prevalence levels, whether or not it's a good choice for different scenarios. you also have to have some understanding of what makes a document important to your data set and whether or not your tool is going to detect that. If the critical thing in your data is, you know, any references to a particular part number that was expected to be defective, then something that ignores numbers is not going to do a good job of separating the relevant documents from the ones that aren't relevant. So you want to know that kind of stuff up front. And when it comes to algorithms, you know, a lot of classifiers will perform better than others on average, but you'll find that on any particular task, it's hard to predict which one is going to do the best. Ones that are just systematically bad, like one nearest neighbor, are kind of rare, but they do exist, so you should be aware if you're using something like that. I would caution people, if you're looking at any research, try to identify which classifier is best. You have to be very careful about what you're looking at. A lot of academic papers on these things use metrics that are not relevant for your discovery. And to just do a little comparison, I pulled up the graphs from the article that I wrote, the TAR proportionality and bad algorithms article. In that, I analyzed one nearest neighbor. If you were to ask what the accuracy was of that one nearest neighbor graph where I said the performance is terrible for e-discovery, it would be 98.3% accuracy, whereas the 40 nearest neighbor, which performs vastly better for e-discovery in that scenario, gives 98.6% accuracy. So 98.3 versus 98.6, the amount of document review you'd have to do to hit 75% recall is different by a factor of 10. People often use metrics that are not good indicators of real-world impact on these things, so you do have to be careful about what you're looking at with some of these research papers.
Well, jumping in, Bill, we have several questions, and they're all around a theme that's pretty obvious from our discussion today, which is, okay, I'm a lawyer. I've got a client. I want to do a good job for the client. I want to have the most efficient review possible. How the heck do I figure out who to work with and who to use? I'm going to suggest that the answer can't be I'm going to analyze and test different algorithms against different data. It's too complicated. But I'm going to suggest that there are at least three factors that I would be thinking about, I think you should be thinking about as you're choosing these products. And one has to be the reputation and experience of the vendor who's running the process. And did they develop their own algorithms and understand and control them versus are they using somebody else's? I would say two would be looking for published results. Is the vendor talking about and at least reporting on results from different kinds of cases and different levels of richness or prevalence? And a third might be participating in some of the juried outside programs where others are testing or validating. Going beyond these, what would you say to our audience as we wrap up this edition of TAR Talk?
I would say talk to the people and try to get some idea of whether or not they know what they're talking about. I mean, when you talk about reputation, you know, there's a lot of that is just correlated with marketing budget. And, you know, talking to people and seeing if they actually have expertise and they can talk to you about, well, does our system perform well in this scenario and that kind of stuff, and seeing if they've actually done tests. And can talk about the pros and cons of what they're doing as opposed to just sort of marketing speak, I think is important.
And maybe talk with the people who are going to be running the process for you to make sure they know something about it. Would that make sense as well?
Sure, yeah.
Hey, well, we try to keep these TAR Talks to about 15 or 20 minutes. I think we're at the limit. I hope you'll come back and join us on our virtual porch. I want to thank you. I want to thank Mary and ACIDS for sponsoring this. And, of course, old Tom Griggs, who always makes it fun here. So thanks, everybody. It's another edition of TAR Talk, and we're happy to follow up with any of your individual questions. But it's been a lot of fun, and stay tuned for our next episode.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks, John.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks, John. Thanks, Tom. And we're out.